TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Crisis in Zionism, Opportunity for Palestine. The UC Berkeley lecture by the Israeli historian Ilan Pappe, held on October 19, 2023. Booth Auditorium had filled to capacity and four more lecture spaces needed to be opened when Ilan Pappe spoke at the Berkeley Law School. Professor Pappe visited from the University of Exeter, UK. There he is director of the European Center for Palestine Studies. Professor Ilan Pappe had originally been invited to Berkeley to explain a new historic development in Israel. There had been massive street demonstrations ever since Prime Minister Netanyahu had formed a government which included members of ultra-right-wing religious parties. They were determined to minimize the power of democratic institutions, such as the Israeli Supreme Court. These cabinet members were also planning to increase Jewish settlement in the occupied Palestinian West Bank, which the UN and the World Court have declared to be illegal. Here first is the moderator of the event, Dr. Usama Makdisi. Among his many books is Faith Misplaced, The Broken Promise of U.S.-Arab Relations. The events in Israel-Palestine had caused tensions and grief on campus, and Dr. Makdisi had been asked to begin the evening by reading a statement by the UC Berkeley Law School.
Good evening and welcome. My name is Usama Makdisi, and I'm the Chancellor's Chair and Professor in the Department of History here at UC Berkeley. Before I introduce our speaker and the event this evening, I was asked to read the statement by the law school. Quote, "Free speech and academic freedom are foundational values for the University of California. UC Berkeley is committed to the belief that speech we may not like or agree with should be confronted with respectful speech rather than censorship. UC Berkeley's principles of community call for civility and respect in our personal interactions. If you would like to express a point of view that is different from what our guests present this evening, you may do so in any area of campus that is open to public free speech. You, of course, may ask questions at the appropriate time. However, you are not permitted to disrupt this event. We ask you, as audience members, to be respectful of the speakers and the students in attendance and refrain from any disruptive behavior. If you attempt to disrupt this event, you will be asked to leave the venue and face possible student disciplinary action." End quote. On a less disciplinary note, I want to acknowledge all the sponsors of this lecture. At UC Berkeley, they are the Law Students for Justice in Palestine, the Department of History, the Center for Middle Eastern Studies, the Department of Ethnic Studies, the Islamophobia Research and Documentation Project of the Center for Race and Gender. I also need to acknowledge the assistance of Norkel Sabil, Dr. Hatem Bazian, as well as the indispensable help of Mr. Hassan Fouda. I realize, of course, that we're gathered here in extraordinary circumstances, given the ongoing inhumane brutalization of Gaza. I realize as well that there's a lot of pain and anger in this room. Many of you, like me, are suffering. Many have friends in Palestine and Israel, and some of you have lost friends or family because of the ongoing situation. Many of you are angry, as I am, at an evident double standard we see everywhere in this country, at the devaluation of Palestinian humanity and history, including by members in this institution. Many of you are suffering intimidation, especially the students here, for standing up for justice and equality in Palestine. I hope, however, you will draw some little hope from the fact that we are hosting a figure as distinguished as Professor Ilan Pappe. Distinguished and at the same time down to earth. There are very few figures who are as august and as intelligent and as brilliant as Ilan and at the same time as down to earth. I say this because Ilan is not only a brilliant historian and colleague, he's also a wonderful person whose presence here is much needed to provide crucial context to help us make sense of what is going on in Israel and, of course, in occupied Palestine. Professor Ilan Pape is the director of the European Center for Palestine Studies at the University of Exeter in the UK and the first such center, as far as I'm aware, anywhere in Europe, and in fact, anywhere in Europe or the United States. Until 2007, Ilan was a professor at the University of Haifa, from which he was expelled due to his ideological positions. In other words, he actually insisted on unearthing and supporting research about the Nakba of 1948. He moved to Exeter, where he teaches now at the Institute of Arab and Islamic Studies. Professor Pape has written 20 books to date, the most famous of which, without any doubt, is his 2006, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, which drew, of course, the ire of many in the political establishment and many in the academic establishment, because Ilan was one of the first, in English at least, and from an Israeli perspective, a dissident perspective, to put the question of ethnic cleansing straight up there, so in a way that was sort of difficult to deny. He's also the author of The Biggest Prison on Earth, A History of the Israeli Occupation. His most recent book is co-edited with Remzi Baroud, and it's entitled, intriguingly, Our Vision for Liberation. But more than anything else, Professor Pape reminds us of the ethical stakes of doing good historical work. He also exposes, in doing this good work, the consequences of insidious dehumanizing and dehistoricizing work. Professor Pape, needless to say, is not only a friend, not only a colleague, he's also born in Haifa. He served in the Israeli army in 1973, and yet today he's one of the leading critics of colonial Zionism and one of the clearest voices against the inhumane and unethical treatment of the Palestinian people. For that, as I have noted, Ilan has been persecuted, precisely because he disproves the idea that what is happening in Palestine and in Israel is an inherent or age-old religious conflict. He insists, correctly in my view, that what has been happening in Palestine and Israel is a secular conflict, a colonial conflict, where each of us has the ability to affiliate with or against justice, but it's a secular decision. He reminds us that what is at stake today is the question of how we want to envision our future. What kind of future do we want to fight for? And to do that, Ilan has always said, we need to know what kind of past we have gone through to get to the point where we are today. So please join me in welcoming Professor Ilan Pape, who will speak about the crisis of Zionism, opportunities for Palestine. A reminder at the end here, this title came up months ago. So things have changed slightly in the last few weeks, but I'm sure Professor Pape will be able to figure out how to manage this. So please welcome Professor Ilan Pape.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Usama, for your very kind introduction. Thank you all for being here today. I want to thank all the organization that made this event possible. And I really appreciate your taking the time to be with us in this very crucial and painful moment in the history of Israel and Palestine. Before the 7th of October, 2023, most of the Israeli Jewish society was looking with some fear and apprehension towards the last weeks of this month. The main discourse in Israel up to the 7th of October 2023 was what would be the future of Israel. Weekly demonstrations by hundreds of thousands of Israelis were part of a movement of protest against the attempt of the government to change the constitutional law in Israel and to create a new political system by which the political powers would have total control over the judicial system and the public domain would be far more controlled by messianic and religious Jewish groups. In one of my articles, I described that particular struggle for the identity of Israel that was the main topic until the 7th of October 2023 as a struggle between the state of Judea and the state of Israel. The state of Judea was the state that was established in the West Bank by Jewish settlers, which was kind of a combination of Messianic Judaism, Zionist fanaticism, and racism, and became a kind of power structure that became far more prominent and important in the last few years, especially under the Netanyahu government, and was about to impose its way of life, its perception of life on the rest of Israel, beyond what we call Judea, in a sense, beyond the West Bank or the Jewish space in the West Bank. Against it stood the State of Israel. The State of Israel, if you want, is best epitomized by the city of Tel Aviv. The idea that Israel is pluralistic, democratic, secular, Western, most important than anything else, or European, if you want, and is fighting for its life against the State of Judea. And this was seemed to be the focus on almost, one could call it, the civil war. If not a real civil war, at least a cold civil war, a cultural war for sure, between the Israeli Jews, between themselves. When some people said to both sides of this internal Israeli strife, what about the occupation of the West Bank, for instance? Should this not be part of the discussion of the future of Israel? They were told, no, the occupation should not be mentioned by any side. The occupation is irrelevant to the future of Israel, we were told. In fact, anyone who was trying to bring the occupation as a topic to the protests, the weekly protests, against the legal reform or legal revolution, as they like to call it, was asked to leave and not to appear with the larger group of protesters who were waving the Israeli flag. Definitely, if you brought the Palestinian flag to that demonstration, you would be beaten up and thrown out of the demonstration. If you would mention the fact that maybe the future of Israel is also the conditions and situation of the almost 2 million Palestinian citizens of Israel who were going through the last year through a process of criminalization, criminal gangs that terrorized, still are terrorizing the life of Palestinian citizens in Israel, everywhere in Israel, armed gangs, criminal gangs, many of them are former collaborators with Israel in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, who were extracted from these territories after the Oslo Accord, highly, very, very well equipped with weapons and totally immunized from any police prosecution or any kind of effective anti-criminal action, which meant that, as many of you may know, Palestinians who live in Israel itself, I'm talking about the Israeli citizens, are fearful to go out at night because of the new reality in their streets and spaces. So that also was not meant to be a topic for discussion in the public domain on the future of Israel. If you wanted to mention East Jerusalem and the ethnic cleansing of the Arab neighborhoods of Jerusalem, again, the demonstrators and their leaders said this is not an important topic. Or as Amir Ahas, the brave journalist of Haaretz, put it, as far as the Israelis were concerned, and this is until the 7th of October, 2023, the occupation did not exist, which meant it did not exist as a problem anymore. It is solved. It is solved. There is a PA. There is a very intensive Jewish presence of settlements in the West Bank. No one has to deal with it anymore. In fact, if you look at the last four election campaigns in Israel, and they had quite a few, as you may remember, one after the other, on a yearly basis, nobody mentioned the Palestine issue, Palestine question, the occupation, call it what you will. This was not a topic that the Israelis were asked to vote about, because it did not exist anymore as a problem. If you mentioned the Gaza Strip, if you were talking about the siege on Gaza, again, people would say, what are you talking about? This is also an issue that doesn't bother anyone anymore. And if you were pointing out to them that actually the daily killing of Palestinians in the last year, what you say in the last 2 years, the daily killing of Palestinians in the West Bank, the constant and recurrent invasion of Al-Aqsa is something that would not will go unnoticed, and there will be repercussions for these policies. And the fact that the feeble Palestinian Authority is unable to protect the Palestinians from the violence of the settlers and the violence of the Israeli army and the violence of the Israeli border police doesn't mean that there are no Palestinian groups that would try and defend the Palestinians, not only in the Gaza Strip, but also those in other parts of historical Palestine. This was said to the Israeli public and policymakers and chief of the Israeli military and secret service again and again. But they said, no, there's no problem. The only problem is the legal reform, whether we accept it or not accept it. And it was very clear why all these other issues were not dealt with. Because what we had in essence in Israel is a struggle between two forms of apartheid. There was the secular Israeli apartheid, in which Israeli Jews definitely enjoy life in a democracy, in a pluralist democracy, if you want, a Western style democracy. That's the kind of apartheid that they wanted to sustain. And you had the counter version of apartheid, the messianic one, the religious one, the theocratic one. So the fight was a domestic Jewish issue of what kind of Jewish life will be in the public domain without any reference to the life of Palestinians, whether these were Palestinians under occupation in the West Bank, under a siege in the Gaza Strip, or under a discriminatory system inside Israel, and not to mention the many millions of Palestinian refugees. All of this was not there. And it all blew up in the face of the Israelis in the morning of the 7th of October. And there is an optical illusion now that because of the shock that definitely Israel underwent in the morning of Saturday, the 7th of October, that all these cracks in the edifice, in the Zionist edifice, has disappeared, because the Hamas attack was so brutal, so devastating, that all the internal debates have been forgotten and everybody is united behind the army and its present plan for invading the Gaza Strip and commencing with the already had commenced, have commenced the genocidal policies on the ground. I think it's an optical illusion. I think the Israeli internal strife is not going away. It will return. I don't know when, but it will return. But what is more important, and this is something we should insist on, I think, as activists, as academics, anyone who in one way or another is related to Palestine and the Palestinian struggle, is our insistence that the events of the 7th of October, however we understand them, however we approach them, from a humane point of view, from a strategic point of view, from a moral point of view, however we approach them, we should not fall into the trap that is seems to quite a lot of good people even are falling into in this country, into decontextualizing and dehistoricizing the events of the 7th of October. And this is something that will not change in the coming weeks. The basic reality on the ground is still the same reality on the ground that was there before the 7th of October. The Palestinian people, since probably 1929, probably since 1929, are involved in a struggle for liberation. It's an anti-colonialist struggle. It's an anti-settler colonialist struggle. And every anti-colonialist struggle has its ups and lows. Every anti-colonialist struggle has moments of glory and has difficult moments of violence. Decolonization is not a pharmaceutical process. It's not a sterile process. It's a messy business. And the longer the colonialism and the oppression, the more likely that the outburst would be violent and desperate in many, many ways. And this is so important to remind people of the history of the rebellions of slaves in this country and how they ended, the revolts of Native Americans, the rebellions of Algerians against the settlers in Algeria, the massacre of Oran during the fight of the FLN for liberation. This is something which is part of the struggle for liberation. You can sometimes question some of the strategic ideas. You may have some uneasy moments, and rightly so, about the way things are being done, but you can never lose your moral compass if you don't decontextualize and dehistoricize the event itself. You seem to be in a struggle against a typical coverage, both by media and academia in this country and in the West in general and in the global North in general, that has this ability to take an event and start with the event as if it has no history. It have no consequence. I mean, even the stories about the kind of party or festival that was attacked on the 7th of November does not mention the fact that this was a festival of love and peace, kilometer and a half from the ghetto of Gaza. People were celebrating love and peace while the people of Gaza, 2 kilometers from that fence, were under one of the most brutal siege in human history that was going on for more than 15 years, controlled by the Israelis, deciding how many calories are getting into the Gaza Strip, deciding who goes in, who goes out, and keeping 2 million people in the biggest prison, open prison on earth. All these contexts allow you to navigate, I think, morally, without losing that compass. But far more important than the immediate context, and even the context of the siege, and this is what I would like to focus tonight, is the fact that one of the biggest challenge as activists for Palestine or scholars on Palestine who are activists is that we cannot challenge decades of propaganda and fabrication and counter-narrative with sound bites. This is our main problem, I think. We need space. We need time to explain the reality because so many outlets, so many sources of information, so many places where knowledge is produced has portrayed a picture, an analysis of Palestine, which is false, fabricated, and has been built throughout the years with the help of academia, the media, Hollywood, TV series, and so on. I mean, these are media that works on people's minds and emotions, and they created a certain story that you cannot challenge with one soundbite. You cannot even challenge it alone by your sense of justice. You can only challenge it if your sense of justice is based on profound knowledge of the history, a profound and accurate analysis of the reality by using the right language, because the language that is being used even by liberal so-called progressive forces is a language that immunizes Israel and does not allow the Palestinian anti-colonial struggle to be justified, to be accepted and legitimized. You know, in the pantheon of anti-colonialist struggle, which many people would put a lot of heroes from Nelson Mandela to Gandhi and to other important leaders for liberation movement, you will not find one Palestinian. They will always be treated as terrorists, whereas by essence, they were an anti-colonialist movement. And that kind of insistence of using the right language, of knowing the history of the place, and having the right analysis is something, as I said, you need space for doing it. You can't sort of come and say, you're wrong and I'm right. And this is a huge challenge for all of us, I think, in a moment like these days in America, for instance, where there seems to be this unconditional support for Israel and hypocritical approach to the suffering of Israelis that was never displayed towards the suffering of Palestinians in any given moment in the history of Palestine.
That was the first half of a one-hour lecture by Ilan Pappé, professor of history, director of the European Center for Palestine Studies at the University of Exeter, UK. Ilan Pappé is one of Israel's new historians. Since the release of classified British and Israeli government documents in the early 1980s, they have offered a new view of Israel's creation in 1948, and the corresponding flight and expulsion of 700,000 Palestinians in the same year. Pappé has written that the expulsions were not decided on an ad hoc basis, as other historians have argued, but they were done in accordance with Plan Dalet, drawn up in 1947 by Israel's future leaders. In a 2004 interview, Pappé said, "The aim has always been, and it still remains, to have as much of Palestine as possible, with as few Palestinians in it as possible." End quote. Prior to coming to the University of Exeter in the UK in 2008, Pappé was a senior lecturer in political science at the University of Haifa. After publishing his book, The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine, Pappé was condemned in Israel's parliament. A minister of education called for him to be sacked, and he received death threats. Professor Ilan Pappé spoke at the University of California, Berkeley, on October 19, 2023. You can find the full lecture and Q&A period on YouTube under the title Crisis in Zionism, Opportunity for Palestine. Please come back for the conclusion of Ilan Pappé's talk and a standing ovation on your radio station or online. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.